So what else do we need to know about this? So is Walter Mischer liable in any way for this?
Well,
are the DuPonts worth investigating on this?
Yeah, the question is, you know, what did they know? Were they just innocent dupes that allowed their land? You know, they made out like bandits. I mean, and the money they got was used to build up St. Joe Paper Company, you know, to expand their paper mill, to buy, you know, long-term investments and CDs. That's taxpayers' dollars. Our money. That's what it went for. Now, were they innocent dupes, or were they part of it? You know, there are other connections, CIA connections to the DuPonts, and we know that. They had to know they were getting more money than the land was worth. We don't know. I mean, the prosecutors have not gone after St. Joe Paper Company and the people there that were involved in this deal.
And to this day, St. Joe is just doing fine.
Oh, yes. And they're supposed, most of that, see, they are owned by a testamentary trust whose beneficiary is the Nemours Foundation that runs hospitals for crippled children. That's the one supposed to get the money. But of the $70 million, only $2 or $3 million was eventually funneled on through the foundation. All of it, almost all of it, was kept within the company.
All right. Thank you, Pete Bruton. We've been talking about the Mafia, the CIA, and George Bush. And we wish you the best of luck on your endeavors.
Thank you.
54321. We're talking with Pete Bruton, the author of The Mafia, the CIA, and George Bush, just out on SPI Press, distributed by Hearst. Look for it in your bookshelves. It's worth a read. This is Dennis Bernstein, and I am here with Susan Burns.
Pete, Will Northrop, an Israeli military intelligence officer and CIA asset, said once, and this is in your book, "You don't know where the CIA stops and where the Republicans start." What do you think he meant by that?
I think when Jimmy Carter was president, you know, he brought in Stanfield Turner as a CIA director, and the idea, they wanted to start a clean house. This was after the Church Committee hearings, where all the stuff about the CIA's, you know, operations and illegal domestic surveillance, assassination of foreign leaders. I mean, people wanted the CIA cleaned up. And, you know, Stansfield Turner came in, I think they had what they call the Halloween Massacre, when he got rid of a number of covert operators, including people like Ted Shackley and Thomas Kleins. They were involved with Ed Wilson, the renegade CIA agent. And these people went, quote, off the reservation. But they sort of continued to do, you know, covert operations, and many of them worked in the Bush-Reagan campaign against Jimmy Carter. And when Reagan took over, these people sort of continued to do, a lot of them weren't brought back in, but they continued to do covert operations. And Corson continued to do this also. And I think, you know, he's talking about that the Republicans, that these CIA renegades were really working for the Republicans to get rid of Carter and to continue a lot of the foreign and domestic operations that were supporting a lot of the right-wing businessmen in this country. And so I think that's what he's talking about. It was when Reagan Bush came in, you know, then all of a sudden Corson's stock goes up. And, you know, and he said, you just can't tell. You know, some of them, they're all Republicans, and they all got involved in these covert operations. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that if Clinton gets elected, will the power structure be different? Will Clinton go with, along with what's been happening over the past 12 years?
I think that's a big question that hasn't been asked and needs to be asked, and reporters should be trying to find out if Mischer et al. Have wormed into the Clinton-Gore campaign. These people do not like to take chances. They don't like to gamble politically. They like to cover their bets. They want to make sure that regardless of who wins, they have an in, and that whoever wins is going to let them operate like they've always been operating. And so, you know, a real big question is, who is doing that in the Clinton-Gore campaign? Who is their front man? How have they insinuated themselves? Are they doing it with hard money? Are they doing it with soft money? You know, because you know they're doing it. Now, back in the early spring of this year, when Clinton was having problems, we weren't sure what was going to happen with the Democrats, Clinton said that if he has to back out or withdraw for any reason, he's throwing his support behind Lloyd Benson. Okay, we know how Lloyd Benson is connected to these people. And also there, I've heard talk that if Clinton wins, that Benson is going to get a very high-ranking cabinet position. So it may be Benson is the front man for these people. And it's probably the reason also that you may not see the Democrats really publicizing my book, because, you know, I didn't want to pull any punches, and I wanted to talk about Lloyd Benson also. And I also say, if the Democrats had won in 1988, the title of the book would have been The Mafia, the CIA, and Lloyd Benson, because he and Bush are two interchangeable peas in a pod.
So there seems to be a difference between Clinton and the stance that Jimmy Carter took, or the stance that Kennedy took regarding the CIA.
No one's ever asked Clinton, you know, what is he going to do about the CIA? What is his policy on the CIA? You know, is he going to get rid of covert operations or tone them down? It, you know, like it was set up to be just an intelligence gathering operation. Is he going to expand them? What's his attitude toward the CIA?
You know, there have been a number of articles. Alexander Colburn, great media critic, definitely left of center, has characterized Clinton on foreign policy as being to the right of George Bush, and might be in fact a real supporter of covert action. I mean, we know that there was a major, as you know, there was a major operation going on in Mena, Arkansas, which included Barry Seal, the Contras, the drugs, the CIA, and the same old story.
Yes, and that operation, of course, was shut down at the investigation of that operation was shut down at the federal level, and the state police, or there's some of them working very hard. They've never been able to get too far. Did Bill Clinton know about this? I mean, it's a good question.
In your book, you describe many layers of protection between the mafia dealings, the CIA covert actions, the SNL dealings, this whole story. A lot of layers of protection between that information and the public. And how do you think the press has handled this whole SNL situation, and what are some of the reasons for why they've handled it the way that they have?
Generally speaking, is very poorly. I mean, there are some exceptions. I think the Dallas Morning News did a pretty good job on the daisy chain of SNLs in Texas connected to Herman K. Beebe. The book Inside Job by Stephen Pizzo, Mary Fricker, and Paul Molo was very good. I mean, in nailing down the fraud, how fraud was the primary cause, and the connections of the politicians. But other than that, the mainstream press, and I'm talking about the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, and the big TV networks, did not do a good job. And, you know, there's a reason for that. It was a very difficult scandal to cover. I mean, it wasn't like you could get a press release handed to you on a silver platter. The people inside the Washington Beltway that knew about it were involved with it. They were not going to tell their favorite story. You know, the CIA wasn't going to go to the Washington Post and say, let us tell you about how we were involved in the SNL scandal. So it wasn't like there were any big sources on this. It was bipartisan, so neither party wanted it out. And the records, the documents that reveal the story are either confidential and not public, or they're hidden away in little county courthouses back in the hinterlands of this country. Very difficult to dig out. So the big press reporters that cover big scandals are going to have a hard time doing this kind of scandal.
You, Pete Bruton, you've been criticized in many instances by some members of the mainstream press as pumping up a story that's not really there, unnamed sources, refusing to identify who it is that you're talking to, which law enforcement says this, that, and the other thing. What's your response to that?
Well, first of all, they need to read the book. I will agree that the number of stories that came out of the Houston Post were rather short on detail, and I hope we can get into that later. I mean, it wasn't because I wanted them to be that way. But I think if you read this book, you're not going to ask, where's the beef? I think this book is very well documented. There are some anonymous sources. I hate anonymous sourcing. I've tried to keep it to a minimum. You cannot do a book about CIA without using anonymous, or the mafia without using anonymous sources. People are afraid of these entities, and the people who are in law enforcement that are still in law enforcement are afraid for their jobs if they start talking about this publicly. But I've always tried to have at least two or three sources on anything I said. And I think the anonymous sourcing on a book like this is really not that much. And not all of the key stuff, I don't think any of the key stuff is anonymous sources.
A lot of the difficulty, I understand, in writing a book like this and doing investigations like this is that a lot of the documents are not public information. All the financial documents of these savings and loans and all CIA, or a lot of CIA documents, are not public, and the only people that can make them public is Congress. Congress is supposed to be representing the interests of the American public, and this is a big story. I mean, $500 billion is unaccounted for. Why isn't anybody in Congress asking questions?
That's one of the big number one question on this story is, where did the money go? Who got it? And what was it used for? No one in Congress has ever asked that question. And I don't know of any reporter that has ever asked that question. No one in the Justice Department seems to care. And the only way you can track the money is to look at the documents that came out of the savings and the loan closing documents, the title company disbursement documents. That's how you find out where the money went. And those documents are not public. They're protected by bank secrecy laws, bank confidential information laws. And Congress has the power to make those public. And they should, because this is our money. This is our tax dollars we're talking about. If there had been no taxpayer bailout, then I can see why these documents would be kept secret. But since this was a taxpayer bailout, it's our tax dollars, we deserve to know where the money went. And Congress should open up these records. And no one in Congress has ever brought this up. And if we want to keep this from happening again, the best way to do it is to make these documents public so the crooks know that the public can look at these documents.
You know, it's very interesting. We've been talking a lot about the CIA and how the CIA operates in secrecy. But isn't it true that in many instances it's easier to get documentation about what the CIA does than what happens in the back rooms of banks, because banks, for instance, have certain loopholes around the Freedom of Information Act?
Well, yes, absolutely. It's the whole idea of banks' involvement in covert operations is something that needs to be explored because of the double layer of secrecy that's there. And the CIA, during the congressional investigation on my stories a couple of years ago, the CIA admitted that five of the individuals I'd named in my stories had done work for them, and four of the financial institutions they had used, but only for, quote, normal business. Well, the CIA doesn't pick these banks and savings and loans out of a hat. They're the ones that they trust and know are going to help them and not give them any static, and that they've used in the past.